Time now for the Limelight Show with old Gene Shepherd, but I'm on tape tonight. I'm off on vacation, and we have selected a Limelight Show from the past that we hope that you'll enjoy. In fact, I think it's a fantastic show. Listen.
I've always had a vague ambition to continue that all the way to midnight. Guys keep tuning in, you know, and I hear this fantastic orgy going on. There would be a line of Shepherd fans by midnight extending from the Limelight all the way to the other side of Hackensack. Yes, that's the Hackensack. That's a great name for a town. You know, Hackensack. That's the ugliest name you ever heard. Sounds like you're coughing up an oyster. Hackensack, cracker. That's how it got named. It's an old Indian name. It was named after an Indian that had a cold. It just makes me think of a couple of other names. You know? Flushing, you know. Roto-Rooter Drive. I know, it's terrible. I'm an awful person tonight. It's very bad. Of course, I think it's because it's spring. And we're like a cake of yeast. We, human beings, springtime. And we begin to send out shoots. Tendrils is the word. And the blood flows up through the veins like sap, you know. You could feel little leaves coming out from behind your ears. How many of you have awoken in the morning and found yourself scratching on the top of your head a nest of robins? You don't like the poetic idea, huh? But nevertheless, we are all part of this vast thing called nature. And it's springtime. And everywhere you look, you can see like the buffaloes on the move. By the way, one of the reasons I always like to go to Secaucus. That's a great town. I love Secaucus. It's a beautiful town. And you see so much truth and beauty in Secaucus. Well, it depends on how you define. Now, there's the Ashcan School of Beauty, you know. And I love to go over to places like Carteret at this time of the year. And I'm going to give you a tip for those of you who are nature lovers. At this time of the year, you can drive out to, say, Carteret, and you park your car by the bushes. And you sit real quietly. And the natives will come out of the weeds. And they'll eat out of your hand. It's the spring. See, hey, it's a little high, Corny. Just a little bit high. It's the springtime, see? And the spring always causes this unrest. And it causes other disasters. How would you like to do a show tonight on natural and other types of disasters? You ready for it, gang? Now, I'm not referring to your date. It's all right. Everybody looks up here and says, how did he know, you know? But seriously, though, I saw a little sad moment just about 15 minutes before I came down to the Limelight. I'm parking the car, you know, and I walk down the street, and I see this 53 Ford. Now, there's something aggressively crummy about a 53 Ford. I mean, it was two-tone, plum-colored on the top, and kind of used coffee milkshake on the bottom. You know, two-tone, see? And it has it's hanging up, and I see the car, it goes past me, and hanging in the back is a skull. And one eye winks red, and the other eye winks green. And I could see he's got one of these, you know, these covers for the steering wheel. It's vinyl leopard skin. And he's got a fake tire in the back. And on the bottom of the car is hanging this New Jersey license plate. They're in town for a big night, see? The car's going, la, 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 la. Smoke is coming out of all, you know, all the holes in it coming out. And it was kind of sad. You know, the wheels are sort of splayed out. And I could see he had bad kingpins. He goes past me, and the guy's looking for a parking place, see? And I said to myself, well, you know, it's the Village. He's not going to do it. And by George, he did it. He parked in a place that would have made a Volkswagen squeak. Now, the way he did it, he just pushed the guy's trunk ahead of him in. And then he backed up and he took care of this guy's grill behind him, see? Now, the car he's got, he's driving, is made out of solid iron. You know? Nothing could dent this old Hulk, you know? So he just goes, boom, boom, and they back out. And I said, well, it's Jersey in town. This is what makes the fun city fun. And I can hear a little glass tinkling, you know. You know, the guy that he pushed the trunk in ahead, he's got a Bentley. You know, I guess it's all part of the revolution, you know. Somehow that Bentley, you know, and each one of those taillights that came down, I could see $17 hanging over. That's just for the lens, see. This guy didn't even have taillights on his Ford, you know, nothing. He just drove in. So I'm walking past them, see. And the door swings open. And out steps this poignant picture. It's two guys. And they've got rented white coats. And they've got dark blue pants with the silk stripe down the side. And they've got these white fluffy shirts with the black ties. And they're two high school seniors. Each one is 9 feet tall. Huh? Oh, their arms are hanging, see? One guy's got a little tiny beard. He's been growing this since his sophomore year. And now, at long last, he's about to graduate in 2 weeks, and you can see it now. You can see the three hairs hanging, see? He's really on top of it, and there are two girls get out, and it's prom night. Did you know that that there are thousands of kids in town now tonight for proms? Well, these two get out, these girls, see? And one of them has got a pink sort of tulle dress, you know? You know that prom dress? That they're worn to no other function. They're just awful-looking prom dresses. You know, she's got this great big, sickly, pea-soup green, kind of an angry-looking corsage. It's got teeth, you know? Some rare flower he got for her, see? And it goes well with the pink. You know, it looks like somebody standing next to her threw up too big, you know? She gets out of the car... And after her steps her girlfriend, and she's got this light yellow dress. And I'm watching them, see? And I'm saying to myself, oh, this is their big night. They'll remember this all of their life. And this girl with the yellow dress steps out of the Ford, see? And as she does so, she catches the back of her skirt on the Ford's door latch. And I hear, and the big guy, you know, the guy that's with us says, What happened? What are you breaking my door? First thing he thinks of is his Ford, you know. He's a true male. And she looks, and the back of her dress is ripped down, you know. She pulls it up, and tears are coming down. And this guy who is with the other one, he comes and he says, look, he says, it's all right. He says, it's okay. So we're going to have a good time. Right? You know, I could see he's got $2 in his pocket. You know, I thought there was, oh, my God. It's prom night. And each one of them had a new senior ring on. You could see it. You know, one kid had string all around. You know? They're all standing there. See, they're about to go out into the world. And then I thought to myself, oh, my prom. Oh, do you want to hear the story of my prom? Oh, it's terrible. I mean, there's kids listening at this hour. And there's nice ladies who believe in proms. And there are Doris Day fans out there. I'm going to tell you about a real prom, you know. I'm a kid, see, and here I am, I'm a senior. It's the middle of May. We're going to graduate the first week of June. And each one of the kids in the senior class has been given this bid. You know, it says, you are hereby invited to the senior prom of the senior class of which you are an integral part. Maybe. Because I was still worried, you know. You know, I figured if I got that invitation, I was home free. You can't go to the prom, and then they flunk you, you know? It's just, so I got the prom bid, you know, and I carried this bid around, and I was thinking to myself, well, who am I going to take to the prom, see? Well, it was a girl in one of my classes. What a fantastic chick. I'll never forget her. You know, all of all men, every man, everywhere, he has deep in his mind a picture of the universal girl. The girl. I mean, the girl that you always suspect you have seen walking down the street, and she just disappears past you. And incidentally, all the guys that are listening who are with their wives are looking at their wives now and saying, it was you, dear. And she's saying, yes, I know. All right, you see. Let's look at it realistically, right, men? I mean, you know, life is life, and life is in bad taste, right? You got to face life. It's in bad taste. And I'm this kid, see? And in my class is Pearl. Oh. What a... I mean, even the name today, when I ever see anybody named Pearl, there's a little touch of heat rash that plays up and down my shoulder blades, you know? I get this feeling of excitement. Pearl stood next to me all the way through my sophomore year, all the way through my junior year, and now we're seniors. And I remember my first meeting with Pearl. It was in Biology 1. It's a great class. I mean, I took Biology 1 because I figured at long last I would find out. And all I did was kept telling me about frogs, you know? Come on, let's get to it, you know? In the whole class, you know, we'd sit down there, and I remember walking the first day into Biology 1. We had this teacher named Miss Crystal Reader. That's her name. I mean, it's a question whether art imitates life or life imitates art. You know? I mean, I couldn't have made up a better name. And here she is, she's got blue hair, see? And it's hard, angry hair. It's like steel wool. And she's got rimless glasses. She was a tall, thin lady. And right at the very beginning of the class, she separated us all into lab partners. Do you remember having a lab partner? We're all lab partners. And she, because biology is a kind of ripe course. I mean, there's a lot of rotten stuff happens in biology labs. You know, like you cut up worms and stuff like that. You know, she assigned a boy with a girl, see? A boy with a girl. And there I am standing, see, back of my lab table. I got this rubber apron on. You know, the butcher's ready to go to work. And standing next to me, oh, this is why I took biology. Standing next to me is Pearl. And she's one of these alabaster girls with this dark hair. And she had these deep, limpid pools for eyes. And she was quiet. You know the kind of enigmatic silence that goads a man into madness? And she just stand there, you know. And there I am, see? I'm the man of the house. Our little house, our little lab table, see? And Miss Reader has one of the finks in the class. You know, you're aware that in every class there's maybe three or four finks. They pass out all the stuff. You know? And somehow they know the teacher before the class starts, you know? They're in the know, this crowd, you know? And here are the finks, you know? They're passing out the first day's lab lesson, and it's a worm. And a very pickled worm. I mean, this worm has been like 9 years in formaldehyde. Each one of us gets a worm, you know, and it's a little cork thing there with little pins. And this Crystal Reader is up in the front of the classroom there, and she looks down and she says, now, she says, one of you in each lab partnership, you're going to be You're going to do the actual dissection. And the other person will take the laboratory notes. And so, you know, I'm big me, see. It's all right, I'll do it. And Pearl looks so sweet. And she gets the laboratory manual out, and I start cutting the worm, see. It's a dead one, you know. And Miss Reeder, you know, she's got this picture of a giant worm up there, and she says, now, you know, you cut like this, and she says, you will notice on the left are the little overload relays that are found in every worm. So I'm cutting this thing like this, see? I'm cutting away, and I'm on top of it, see, and I'm showing her what a man I am. I said, I'll take care of it, Pearl. You know, love comes from deep within us, see? And you never know what's going to start it. And here's this worm. See, I'm putting the pins down, and that worm has got two eyes. It's looking up. Well, Pearl's standing next to me, see, looking, oh, what a girl. I mean, she embodies all of girlhood. Delicacy, grace, femininity, subtlety. And there was also about her the elusive aroma of a rare and fragrant perfume from Woolworths. Yeah, you know, I could, you know, oh, she's maddening, see. And it was mixing with the formaldehyde. Her perfume. And she had our green lab book. That, you know, she's writing down two eyes. You know? And this worm keeps looking up at me. I keep looking down at the worm. And I'm starting to sweat. You know that terrible feeling of you're about to be sick? You're about to be sick, see? And up here is Miss Crystal Reeder. See, she's got her rubber apron on, and she's cut 19 worms in half already. Some people like to cut worms up, you know? What do you think brought her here, you know? After all, you know? All of her life now, she's cutting frogs open, see? And so here she had her worms all cut up, and she's showing, I'm getting sick, see? Oh. And every time I would move that little knife, we had this dull little knife, you see, that had been used by 16,000 Biology 1 classes before me, had this rubber blade. Every time I'd move the knife, the worm would go, no, no. Oh, no, no, no. I'm cutting away there, see. And all of a sudden, I knew I wasn't going to make it. Now, for lunch that day, I had had 3 banana Twinkies. I had had a cheeseburger with 4 pounds of piccalilli on it. I had had 3 root beers and 1 triple dip tutti frutti ice cream cone. It was my usual lunch in high school, you know. My mother would give me this half a dollar to eat down in the cafeteria where they had the balanced menus. And there wasn't one single hip kid that ever went there. You know? This big fat Miss Bundy was our dietitian, you know. She believed in fish and noodles. We believed in Twinkies. And so here I am, you know, I'm all of a sudden, 1 Twinkie, it was the second one from the left. And hollered, Oli, Oli, Ocean Free! Ready or not, here I come! Come on, let's hear it! Let's give that Twinkie a hand! I'm down there with the worm, you know. All of a sudden, a thin, faint stream of used root beer starts coming out of my left ear. Oh. Oh, boy. And Pearl is standing there as... She is as cool as yesterday's ice cubes, you know. Oh, boy, what a chick. She's on top of it, you know. She keeps looking down, and my neck is sweating. I'm putting the weight on it. And then suddenly, the cheeseburger The cheeseburger turned over in its sleep. I could feel it, you know. Oh, God. And ahead of me, the only thing that made me hang in there, though, ahead of me, I could see Alex Joshua. Old Alex Joshua, he, too, was a fellow sufferer. All the way through my high school and my grade school career, me and Alex Joshua were twin. We were twin totems of defeat. Yeah, Joshua and I never developed quite the shifty eye. You know what I mean by the shifty eye? That's the eye of the kid who's never called on when he's caught flat-footed. A second grade teacher. Hear that fiendish cackle? She specializes in spotting the one kid in the class that instead of doing what he had to do last night, went bowling. And he's sitting there looking real bright, you know? And he's radiating. Call on me. I know. Oh, yeah. And Joshua and I, we alternated. You know, it's eerie. We alternated that whenever there were, you know, they'd call for questions from the floor, and the teacher would say, all right, now, if A is to B and C over D is to Y, what is L over D? What is all that stuff about? Have you ever figured all that stuff out even yet, you know? Well, Joshua, he and I alternated. But if I knew one question out of nine that the teacher was about to ask, she would call on Joshua for that one. That would be the one he didn't know. And the two of us, back and forth, you know, we'd always be passing each other on the way to the board. Joshua, you know, and I'm saying, you know, I go past him, you know. The two of us, he's coming back to sit down. I'm going up to be defeated, you know. Hey, do you remember ad-libbing at the board? You say, well, A over D. You know, this is where I learned to be an actor, see. You know, you say, you gotta approach it with tremendous confidence. I mean, it's the kid that goes, A. You say, A is to D times C over L is equal to D over R prime and the square root of 7. And I want to tell you, any of you kids out there, 99 times out of 10, you'll get away with it. Because your teacher ad-libbed her way through it. If you do it real quick and say it real snotty, she's dead. Like if she says, what were the basic causes of the war of 1812, Fred? You say, well, of course, they were obviously economic. She says, yeah? You know, you learn to hulk your way up, you know. And I remember, oh, gee, but what a sickening feeling, you know. I remember one time, Mr. Pittenger. Isn't that a rotten name? I mean, say it to yourself, Pittenger. That's not Rock Hudson. I mean, Clarence M. Pittenger. And he had a, you know, his hair was parted right in the middle, see. And it was flat like a bartender, see. And he had this round face with these two blank, rimless glasses in the eyes. Mr. Pittenger. And Mr. Pittenger had a hobby. It was trapping kids. And he used to let you walk right into it, see. Pittenger was my Algebra 2 teacher. Now, I had faked my way all the way through Algebra 1, see. Because I had poor old C.M. Settlemyer. I mean, anybody with a name like Settlemyer, somehow he has to milk of human kindness, you know. He would say, well, what difference does it make if the kids don't know, you know? And the kids didn't, of course. They're here in school to learn more interesting, important values, like getting along with each other. And we got along great in that class. Oh, we'd sing and dance and yell and holler, drink beer in a class, you know. We were learning values, see. At the age of 9, I was chewing tobacco in a class, and, you know. But then we moved out of Mr. Settlemyer's class into Algebra 2, and oh, it was fantastic. It was like night coming on after an eternal day. The entire class moved in, and standing up by the board is a stone face. And he started to read the roll. Now, you can tell a lot about a teacher, about the way they read the roll. Now, some teachers say, Dorothy Anderson, are you here, Dorothy? Eileen Akers, is Eileen here? That teacher is a breeze. Any teacher that uses your first name... This guy started out, he says, Anderson, Akers, Brown, Fig Newton, Schwartz. I mean, he was a born first sergeant. Last name, see? And already at that time, you know, we're working out of sheer instinct. The kids don't say here. They go, yo. what a character. And then he started out, see, and he gave us our opening speech. He said, all right, you're now in Algebra 2. I don't know what went on in Algebra 1. And next door, in the next room, was another Algebra 1 class meeting, see? And they were having their first concert. You could hear the harmonicas going and the guy's playing a banjo. Nothing but silence in Algebra 2. He says, I don't know what went on in Algebra 1, but I'll tell you what's going to go on in Algebra 2. I'll tell you what. Algebra. This is what we've been feeling all along. He says, all right, now, right away. A is to B times C over D is equal to R over the square root of minus J. Shepherd. Trapped. And I'll be back immediately after the news with the denouement of this sad tragedy. Let's hear it. Yeah! Hey, hey! Come on. Okay. All right, I'm sorry. Okay, I'm sorry. Do you think... All right, I'm sorry I said it. Now, aren't you ashamed of yourself? Now, do you know what I said might have got on the air? You mean you wanted to get on the air? That's what's known as greasy kid stuff. If you listen carefully, you can hear the sound of his pimples thrumming. In the dark. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, somebody wanted to, you know, I've got to finish the story about Pearl, though. Oh, yeah. I mean, because, you know, this is spring, you know. And in springtime, there are all kinds of things happen. And Pearl and I went through this biology class. And you want to know how it ended with the worm? Well, I better not. There's a lot of people eating. And I'm working on the worm, see? And Pearl bent over and she says, aren't you feeling well? I mean, no male is going to admit he's beaten, you know? I went, yeah. Very good. And up ahead of me, I could see Alex Josue, see? And Josue is bent over a frog. And I could see the back of his neck is green. And standing next to him is this cool chick. And so I knew that there was at least two of us that were going through this hell. So I'm working away at the worm. And she's looking down at me. And Miss Crystal Radio's looking at all of us. And then, suddenly, off in the distance, I heard the bell ring. Have you ever felt in a long time that fantastic sense of relief when the bell goes, oh, and you got the chalk up here? Mr. Pittenger's waiting to see what you do with the square root of minus J. The bell goes, oh, and you go, bang, boom. You're out like a shot, you know. Well, the bell rang, and 5 minutes later, the entire male contingent of the Biology 1 class, en masse, were running down the hall in our rubber aprons, heading for the room down at the end of the hall, you know, with the swinging door. And from that time on, Pearl became a kind of will-o'-the-wisp. I touched her belly button. Pearl became a will-o'-the-wisp, and all men have got one, see? It's the unattainable girl who has superhuman qualities. I mean, she could cut up a worm like she was cutting rye bread. Incidentally, the next day, she took over all lab dissection duties. You know, and she gave me an out. That was what was good about it, see? She says, let me try it. And I was working away this time on a frog. I said, yeah, okay. Here, now, I'll show you how to do it. And she says, thank you. And from that time on, I stood by and sort of supervised. I'd say, the leg is moving. Watch that leg. It's not supposed to move, Pearl. And Pearl never talked to me. You know, that's why the Sphinx makes it so big. Just sits there. It just sits there with nothing but sand around it for miles. People come up on camels. The Sphinx. It never says, hello, hi. And so hence it's mysterious. I say that why people dig the Mona Lisa is because it just sort of looks. It looks like it's just about to say something, but has thought better of it. It's a subtle put-down. It's the put-down of the silent enigma. And there are no other types of enigma, friends. They're always silent, and Pearl was always silent. And she always knew how to stand in the light. The light would come filtering down through the Venetian blinds. I remember in English, too, she would stand at the blackboard, and she's taking apart a sentence. By the way, did any of you ever figure out how the hell to do that? You know what I used to do? I used to say, adverb, gerund, pipkin. I mean, I used to ad-lib parts of speech, you know. It's the verb, the adverb, the gerund, the glunk, the pitkin. I mean, you know, and they all hang down the droop, you see. And Miss McCullough, H. McCullough, known to the kids as Hell on Wheels McCullough. Her name was Helen W. McCullough, see. They call her Hell on Wheels McCullough. And she was, oh boy, here's old Hell on Wheels, see, and I'm up here with my... the pipkin hangs down here. See, I'm trying to hide the board from her, see? I'm pipkin. Have you ever practiced the way of drawing on the board where your letters get littler and littler and dribble off? That's the universal phrase. She says, you mean constitution by this word. You say, yeah. What you wrote was ain't. You know, just dribbles off. And so Miss McCullough used to stand back of me while I'm dissecting a statement, diagramming a sentence. I'd get this all over, and she'd say, "All right, now, Shepherd, would you care to explain it to the class?" You didn't have to say nothing to the class. That little bunch of phonies, you know? Every one of them, all I could see coming out of the class, how is he going to get out of this one now? And you know, I'll never forget one time I did such a fantastic, beautiful, magnificent description of this totally erroneous diagram that the class burst into applause. Standing ovation, you know? Well, this was the kind of world that we lived in, see? There were the haves and the have-nots in our class. That is, the kids with brains and us. Yeah. And, you know, and always, I've noticed another very interesting thing, that the kids who are the perpetual, perennial striker-outers are always at the end of the alphabet. We were always way in the back, you know, and that rabble of kids that the teacher can't see. You know, she's nearsighted. And she can't see. There's just that little mess of kids back there. And there we are. It's the slums of the class. You know, me and Wisnowski and Schwartz. You know, Helen Weathers. We even had a dumb girl. Now, that's a rare class. I mean, old Helen Weathers sitting there, you know, at the age of nine, Helen weighed 320, you know. And she had her hair cut like this, you know, like that. Yeah. Helen was always sitting there among all the rest of the failures. There'd be Helen Weathers, Schwartz, old Kashmir Wisnowski. Yeah, and you know what we used to do? One of the saddest things of all is we would cheat, see? From each other. I mean, you know, that's really... I'd look over at Kashmir, see? Or Wisnowski sitting over here, see? I'm like this. And Kashmir has made a circle around the D. Poor Kashmir. And he is looking over the shoulder of Helen Weathers, who's made a circle around the D, see? And she has stolen it in turn from Schwartz. And Schwartz, you see, he didn't steal it from anybody. He was just naturally dumb and aggressive. See, there's two or three types of dumb people. There's the one kind of dumb person that is dumb but doesn't know it. Says, "Oh, what do you mean? I know that. Let me tell you this." You can hear these dumb people all over. They're the guys at the bar. They're always saying stuff like, "Now, look, I know a guy in Trenton who has a cousin who lives just outside of West Plimpton, New Jersey. That guy knows a guy at his shop what invented a carburetor that gets 45 miles to the gallon of water. If they put that thing in a car, it'd put every one of them gas companies out of business. Do you think they'd let that one out?" Oh. They won't let that one out. You know what they did with that guy? They sent him to Devil's Island. They bought it from him for $50,000 and sent him to Devil's Island. That guy's got that, they got that patent locked up. That ain't all. You know, you walk around, have you noticed sometimes you walk around and you see... Have you noticed that people are always looking for matches and stuff? Do you know that a guy invented a match that is good for a lifetime? Put every match company out of business? They ain't letting that out. Now, there you see. There is the aggressive klutz. He spreads his klutziness. He could be called a carrier of a virus. See, he's the spreader. Then there's the rest of us to catch it from him. You know, there's the other type of dumb guy who's standing at the other end of the bar and say, "Yeah? You mean to tell me they make beer out of that? And they ain't letting it out, huh? Boy, I can see why. You know, this is the, you might say, this is the passive dumbness. And that's the way our little group was. Schwartz would start it. Schwartz would say, B. Helen Weathers would see him. She would pass it to Wisniewski, who would pass it to me. Schwartz would then look over his shoulder and get it confirmed for me. That'd be B, see? And so, year after year after year, this little group would get 30 out of a possible 100. I mean, this little quartet of defeat. But we never knew it, see? And up at the front of the class, there was always a teacher. And she was always calling. There were always about five people in the class that the teachers like. You know, that kind that instantly, before the teacher even has the question out, she says, and now I'd like to ask five of them. Ooh, you want to kill them, you know. They're always so bright and sharp and their glasses shine. They brush their teeth. You know, everything is so great about them. And in the back, here would be Schwartz, the Shepherd. And we're sitting there in our corduroy knickers. I mean, I had a pair of knickers that were so old that they were growing twigs. You know? And so these little things that we run back and forth with, these classroom battles, these token issues that are drawn, finally lead us to where we are. Ultimately, do you think for a minute David Susskind sat next to a Wisniewski? No. You can't imagine Chet Huntley stealing wrong answers from Helen Weathers. Certainly you can't imagine David Brinkley. You know? Not with that look. He sat right in the front. Any guy with a B, Brinkley, you know. He was right in the front. He has that snotty look, you know. Yeah. All the rest of us. And, of course, always in every class I was in, there was Pearl. Oh, she drifted like some kind of mystic cloud. And she lived in some mystical place. We all lived in the same block. Pearl every day came to school in a car. And I began to see her in the hall. You know, when she wasn't wearing the rubber apron and stuff. And I pretended that I knew her. I'd say, and she'd drift past. Pearl. And then finally came that big day. It's the day where we're handing out the prom bids. The prom bids. Yeah. You didn't think I'd get back to it, did you? Let's hear it. You guys are going to learn one day you're dealing with a pro. This isn't Uncle Emil up here telling funny stories. You know, that big day came, and now we're seniors, you know. And when you're a senior, you have the illusion that you're really on top of it. You know, you got the world by the you-know-what. You know, you get this illusion, see, and I'm thinking, shall I go for broke? Shall I go all the way, see? And I've got stuck in my sport coat pocket, I've got that bid to the prom. Now, in our school, the tradition was that whoever you wished to take to the prom, you would take, on this one day, you would take your bid and you would put it on her desk in her homeroom. You got that? You can already see inbuilt disaster. Inbuilt disaster, see. And so I've got this thing, and, you know, I got the prom thing stuck down in my pocket. And I'm at home then. It's like Thursday night. It was Friday that we were going to do this. The prom was the following week. And so it is Thursday night. And I'm lying in my sack. You know, I'm a kid. Although I don't know it, see. I think I'm a senior. You know, that's something else. That's not a kid, see, to a senior. And I'm lying in a sack there, seeing my kid brother is... He's over there. He's whimpering under the daybed. You know, family life was going on normally, and I could smell what was left over from the meatloaf from supper. I could smell it there, and I'm lying on the sack there, and I'm thinking, see, shall I go all out? Shall I do it? Shall I go all the way? I mean, the heck with Esther Jane Albury. There's a time when a guy's got to go for the big game. I said to myself, why not? After all, we went worming together. I mean, we cut up a frog together. We got something that other people ain't got. I took the frog's liver from her hand, and I gave her the pancreas, and we colored it purple in our diagram together. We've got something. You know, that's how disaster is created. You convince yourself of a non-existent case. And I says, and not only that, I'll never forget the day. I'll never forget the day when, oh, yes. Yes, the day that they had the turtle in class. And I'm a great man with turtles. I'd had a pet turtle for 5 years. And I showed her how to hold the turtle. And she says, thank you. And she held the turtle, and then it did a funny thing in her hand. And she thought that I made it do it. That I really knew something about turtles, see? And I played it cool. I says, well, you know, some guys know turtles, others don't, you know. Some got it, some ain't. I mean, a turtle man is a turtle man. I says, you know, she, maybe she's just waiting for me to say something. Maybe. And so I take my little invitation. It's engraved. And it's got the high school seal on the top of it, you know. In hoc spittle lunk. In hoc agricola lout. That was our school motto in Latin. You know, it means you get what you deserve. And we got it, you know. We were all there together, see. And our school colors were purple and white. And here's this engraved purple and white invitation. Looked terrible. But we all thought it was great. You know, had a purple envelope, see. And so the next day, it's Friday morning, see. It's the middle of May. And the prom is 1 week off. I'm all excited. And I go tearing into school. Now, I knew that Pearl's whole room was room 205. I had tracked her there for 4 years. I'd watch her go in, see. You know, I was at 220, which was kind of a second-rate slum homeroom. Yeah, we had Miss Snyder. She was the only teacher I ever saw in my life that carried a bullwhip with her. Yeah, Miss Snyder would just walk around in front of the homeroom and snap it, you know. And she was our advisor. You ever ask your advisor for advice? Just one word of advice she once gave me. I came up with it. She says, forget it. And you know she was right. We're laughing at her. I have forgotten it. I forgot all of trigonometry. The instant I got out of it, you know. And she was telling me, forget it. It's ridiculous. And so I see that 205, see. Room 205. I've got my little envelope, see. I'm there 5 minutes early. And I walk into my home room. And here are a couple of kids sitting there. You know, there's always a couple of guys get in there early. You know. Their old man brought them to school. You know. They're early. Then there's the rest of us, see, that kind of dribble in one by one. Another day. Another bad mark on the record. Another defeat. Another tiny bit of misinformation crammed into this decadent cavity of my brain. Another step towards God knows what. And this day was different. I've got on my new sport coat, my electric blue sport coat, I had this electric blue Robert Hall sport coat. And you know, it was the kind that was so blue that it lit up with batteries. And transistors, you know. Up in the shoulder pads. And I can remember those shoulder pads, they stuck out this far. And they were big wads of horsehair, see? And I had shoulders like that, you know. Fantastic. I'd come in through the classroom, I'd have to go in sideways, you know. Swing my shoulders around, it was cut down, went down to my knees. Had these two pearl buttons, you know, with lion's heads in each one, you know. And so I'm wearing my new sport coat for this significant moment. I go into room 205. I look around, see. I'm looking for Pearl's desk. And sitting at the front there is her homeroom teacher, a quiet, distinguished lady. And I said, Excuse me, Miss Mattson. She says, oh yes, you're looking for Pearl. Her desk is the one with the line next to it. And I look down there, and there's nine other guys standing there. And sure enough, piled up on the desk, she has 17 purple envelopes. What do you do? I'll tell you what you do. If you're me, you stick your envelope back in your pocket, you know? And I go sneaking back in room 220. Oh, Pearl. Pearl. This is the prom. I want to remember this all of my life. This beautiful girl. And sitting over here is Helen Weathers. Helen Weathers, you know? And I look at Helen Weathers, see, and she, you know, Helen Weathers was already, you know, she gave up years ago. I mean, Helen Weathers gave up years ago. She's got nothing but books piled up, see. She knows nobody's going to come in and put a thing on her, you know, desk. I look up at Helen. I look around my homeroom, my sad little platoon. I was trying to bust out, you know. No room at the top. Speaking of the top, friends, what radio station is this?
WOR!
And we're in what fantastic fun city?
WOR!
Oh. Hey, this tastes great.
This is good beer.
Good beer? This Ballantine is great beer.
Hey, what did they do to Ballantine?
What did we do to Ballantine? We improved it. It's not easy to make a good beer better, but we did it. If you haven't had a Ballantine lately, better get up to date. Try improved Ballantine today.
Ballantine's got the flavor that says, hey friend, do it again. Ballantine, Ballantine's beer.
Hey, this is great beer.
Why not? They improved it.
Ballantine, Ballantine beer.
Ballantine Premium Beer. Try it.
Hey, friends, happy 4th of July weekend from P. Ballantine and Sons. Drive carefully for a safe holiday and have lots of fun wherever you are.
As far as I know, she's still got it. You know, and so we would just, you know, Esther Jane and I would walk down through the snow, both of us wearing our sheepskin coats with our helmets, with our goggles. And we were totally indistinguishable. She was not a girl to me. She was Esther Jane. And now, all of a sudden, Esther Jane becomes a girl. She's got four invitations at a prom. And one of them is mine. I'm sitting in the back there. Which way is it going to go? Who are the other finks? What are you trying to do? Cut in on me, Wisniewski? Here's old Chet. Sitting there. He had his eye on Eileen Akins. That was another story. You should hear that story. Not only did he have his eye on her, he got there. And I'll never forget the night that the explosion hit the neighborhood. That was something else. When her mother called my mother. And I said, I don't know her. My mother said, you do too? Oh, that's another story. Oh, a lot of things happen under that high arching sun. Under the sky of man. And there was Esther Jane with four invitations. Well, Friday goes by like an arthritic caterpillar. I mean, it was one hellish class after the other. I mean, civics. You ever sat through civics? And they have blocks, and one of them says executive department, and the other one says judiciary department, you know? And you have to keep moving the blocks around. And so one class after the other, and now it's Friday night. Friday night. And we had a tradition. Tradition on what they call bid night. That's bid night, see? Bid night means you come back to your whole room. Now, every night we would cut out of school, you know, at the end of the class, the last class. We never went back to our home room. But on bid night, all the seniors come back to see if the Easter Bunny has been there. What a cruel school. Oh, jeez. You know, and I come back to my desk, see, I can't look. I got a book up. Oh! There's an invitation! An invitation, see? I look up there, here's Esther sitting there, my good old Esther Jane. Old Esther, with her back to me. I pick it up. Ah, Esther. I pull it out, and it says, you are hereby invited to go to the prom this year with Helen Weathers. I want you to imagine it, friends. I mean, there are several Helen Weather type girls in the audience here who fail to see the humor of this. Well, let's put it this way. There's a Gene Shepherd type in the audience who does not either. It's not funny. Fat Helen. I mean, I could see me coming up with my rose, my corsage, and pilling it, you know, putting it on Helen. It would be roughly like pinning a dandelion on a Zeppelin. I'm not being cruel. It's a fact. I have nothing against Zeppelins. I like them. They're beautiful. I like Zeppelins. It's very nice. And Helen had a beautiful soul. But when you're a senior in high school, I ask you, is it the soul you are seeking? What is it? You don't know. All it is that mystique, see? And here's old Helen sitting there, see, with her back to me. She's sitting up here. And over here is Cashmere. The Cashmere's sitting there, you know. He's got a worried look on his face. And up here is Schwartz. Schwartz is looking worried. He's got his eye on another chick over in the left-hand corner that he's been pursuing for years. Her name was May. Do you remember May from second grade? Yeah. Well, you can see why Schwartz was pursuing her. You see? So he's got his eye going up there. And all of us, there's this little drama. Little did we realize that it was about to set the pattern of all of our lives to come for thousands of years in the future. I'm sitting with, wondering what am I going to do with this thing here. When all of a sudden, Helen Weathers looks over her shoulder and she gets this funny look on her face. She looks away. It was fear. A funny look. As though I am not going to pick up her invitation. And she's sitting forward, hunched over her desk. I got the invitation. I say, I will be a man. I will do the right thing. Son of a gun. That's not actually the phrase I used. You know, I mean, there's a time when you got to give to the man, your fellow man. There's a time when you got to stop being a kid and you have to become a part of pulsating society. You must make sacrifices. And so I get up and I walk over to Helen Weathers. And I say, Helen. And she looks up at me and she's got this strange look on her face. And she says, Jean. I said, Helen. She says, Jean, I thought that was Cashmere's desk. Rejected by Helen Weathers. I said, oh, excuse me, Helen. I will put it on his desk. It will serve him right. And I take that thing, you know, I put it on Cashmere's desk. Cashmere looks at it and gets white. I said, you're a baby. And I sit, you know, crying out loud. I got an empty desk. Nothing. I have struck out. I'm like a New York Met third baseman on World Series Day. I'm not in the game. I'm sitting there, see. Oh, am I bugged? Oh, son of a gun. I know what I'll do. I'll take my kid brother. No. And then the worst of all possible things come to mind. I had this cousin, Merle. Do any of you have a cousin, Merle? I mean, I thought everybody had a cousin, Merle. Merle is a tall, thin girl who spent her entire adolescence in the bathroom. I mean, yeah, she just locked the door in the morning and never come out. And you could hear my Uncle Charles banging on the door, let me in! And she's in there looking at her face or doing her hair, you know. And that was the kind of girl, and she was tall. She was 6'1". I was 5'2". And Merle was my age. And she went to this crummy girls' school called Lucy Flower Tech. Lucy Flower Tech. Lucy Flower, we are for you. That was their song, you know. Lucy Flower. I thought to myself, okay, I gotta take a girl. I guess technically Merle is a girl. Although I didn't have first-hand knowledge. Actually, she was a cousin. Which is not a girl or anything. Just a cousin, you know. So I take my invitation home. And here's my mother. You know, my mother always had these great ideas. You know, yeah, she always thought it would be nice if we took our cousins to parties. You know, I had that kind of mother. And so I come into the kitchen. And I say to my mother, I say, hey, Ma. You know, I've been thinking about the prom. Ma, what the heck, you know, Merle goes to a girls' school, and they don't have no prom, and my mother turns, and being a mother, see, she knew more than I thought she did. She turns and she says to me, you're going to take Merle to the prom? And I said, well, I kind of thinking of it. You know, Merle's, she don't have no boyfriend. She goes to this girl's school. And she said, did you get your invitation back from Pearl? I said, what, Ma? What Pearl? She says, did you strike out? You know, and I never thought my mother knew about stuff like that. You know, as a matter of fact, I had a lot of ideas about my mother. I always wondered how I came to be. You know? It's kind of a spooky thing about my mother. And she says to me, Gee, she says, I don't know what it is. But out there on the dining room table, somebody left a purple envelope in the mailbox. I said, in the mailbox? Who? Don't tell me Schwartz is inviting me. I mean, we get just like Schwartz, you know. Me and Schwartz, you know, we go down there. We each got a corsage, you know. I mean, that's the way we were anyway. We hung around the bowling alley. Why not go to the prom, you know? What the heck? We could stand around at the prom and yell at girls, you know. Hey, baby, wow. Woo-hoo! Woo! Wow! Woo! Have you ever seen three Martys at a prom? Well, you know, I said, no, what is this? You know, Schwartz. And I take the envelope and I open it up, and inside it said, you are hereby invited to come to the Hammond High School prom. Pearl. I beat out 17 other guys. It must have been the way I cut that worm. It did it. I got this thing. Said, holy smokes, I'm going to go with Pearl. I can't believe it. Pearl. And she left it in the mailbox. Maybe she was too shy to come into room 220. She's in love with me. Oh. Well, that weekend passed like some vast dream of preparation. I dreamed of the prom. I could imagine myself tall and slim. That was ridiculous right there, you know? I saw myself tall and slim, you know, like those guys in the Playboy clothing ads, you know? With the square jaw and the orange face. With the hair falling down over the eyes, you know, that kind of guy. The kind of guy, you know, that makes Tony Curtis look like Winnie the Pooh. And I could see myself in this white coat. You know, we were all going en masse. All of the guys in my class were going down to this place that was over the pool room where they rented tuxedos. And I could see myself in this white jacket, see? And you know, with that fluffy shirt, with the maroon tie, and you know, the little maroon flower they put on here, and the pants with the silk down the side, I could see myself swirling forever, dancing eternally, me and Pearl, under the Japanese lanterns, forever. Well, here's the way it worked. You want to know how it really worked? All right. Here comes Wednesday. And Wednesday is rent your tuxedo day. And I'm standing in this little room, see, and there's a little short, fat guy with a cigar. And he takes a look at me, and he says, hey, Izzy, give me one of the short, wide ones. Yeah, the bowling ball model, Izzy. I'm standing in front of these mirrors, see, and he brings out, Izzy comes out from behind the back, see, and he's got this box with a tuxedo in it, and he opens it up, and he takes the jacket out, and it's got ketchup all over it. And it's got a hole in the back. A bullet hole. And he tries, you know, he puts it on me, see, and I'm looking down at this thing. And Manny, the proprietor, see, Manny says, we'll clean it up before the prom. He says, it just came in. I mean, it must have been a Ukrainian wedding. You know, it had cabbage on one shoulder, you know, and it was lipstick all over, you know. This is the beginning of the prom. I said, well, you have another one? Hey, Izzy, bring out the other one. He brings in the other one, see? And he tries it on. And it didn't fit. It was too narrow. It went out here. You know, it should have gone in. It went out. Went in up here. I'm standing. But at least it was white. I stood in front of the mirror, see? And Izzy says, fits you like a glove. I'll tell you, like a fielder's mitt. To fit you like a glove. He says, try on the pants. So I pull the pants up, you know, and they got the stripe down the side, and I could see half of the thread was coming off. You know, it was coming up. I pull it up like this, and one of them comes up here, and the other one hangs down over my shoe. He says, you can roll it up. When you dance, they never see it. So the night of the prom dawns, bright and clear. I get in my Ford, which I have been polishing now for 6 straight days. Oh, how beautiful it was, my little Ford. It was sky blue. And I had put 6 coats of Simonize on it. I mean, it was a 17th hand Ford. It didn't have a motor. It didn't have a drive shaft. But, oh, what a coat of Simonize. Oh, what a coat of Simonize. It was so like life to come. You know? And I drive down through that beautiful moonlit night. It's the 3rd week in May. I've got my white coat on. And I'm driving into the rich part of town. And there is Pearl's house. And it's kind of leaning. Men, you know what a girlfriend house looks like? You know, it's got this girl in it. You know, it looks mysterious, see? Looks pregnant, you know. Standing like this. It's got screens all around it. And I pull up in front of the house. I said, no, I better not toot. You know, I had this horn that went, ah, oh. I got it from Montgomery Ward, see. It was called the Jackass Bray Special. And, ah, oh. And so I get out of the car and I come up through that fragrant evenings, that fragrant Indiana. I could smell the snowball bushes. I knock on the door. The door swings open. And there's her father. Looks down at me. I look up at him. And I can't remember her name. He scares me right out of it. You know, he's a real father, see? He says, hey, Pearl! There's a guy here in a white coat. You know, we had a phrase in our neighborhood that one day the man in the white coat's coming. He says, hey, Pearl, there's a guy here with a white coat. And she came drifting out. Oh, I'll never forget it. Oh, what a fantastic sight. Pearl came drifting out of that front door. She looked like a vision. And she was wearing this kind of chartreuse dress. Chartreuse. And I had gone all the way, see? I had spent every last cent that I had on an orchid. Friends, there is no uglier flower than an orchid. That orchid is like this, you know. It's got a yellow tongue. Big yellow tongue. And it's purple, see? Do you know what purple looks like on chartreuse? Well, I go up to her, she says, oh, you know, I got it in the box, and it's all ribbons and jazz, you know. I said, oh, Pearl, this is for you. And she opens it up. And you can see her face sink slightly. She says, oh, how nice. And she pins it on. And here is that purple orchid looking at me. And her chartreuse dress. We get into my little convertible Ford and we start to drive to the prom, the Cherry Hills Country Club. I had never gotten anywhere near the Cherry Hills Country Club except the caddy one day there. And now I'm going into the club itself and we're driving on our way to the club. And now we go up to the driveway and we're in and the band is playing Red Sails in the Sunset. And I am dancing with Pearl. And I start to sweat. It's running down my back. And there is a hair in my shoulder pad that is drilling its way into the marrow of my shoulder bone. And she keeps looking at me. And that orchid kept looking up at me going, ah. And I could see Pearl, and she's beginning to sweat. I've never seen Pearl sweat before. And the two of us are going back and forth. And I can see in the distance, I can see Chester Wisniewski. He and Helen Weathers. They're clearing a path. The two of them, you know, they're going around like this. And Chester keeps looking over at me and he's going... He's hollering obscenity. Then I go... I mean, these are the little things that happen in proms, you know. Schwartz goes drifting by with Helen, with Eileen Akers, little realizing that his whole life was going to be dogged by this chick later. They got married and had 9 kids, and she tried to shoot them, you know. Here they are. Oh, little do we realize the web we spin, see. And I'm with Pearl. Well, this went on and on and on and on. The band kept playing and I kept sweating. I could feel my nose was beginning to run. And this cummerbund, you know, they had this thing around me. It was now twisted, see? And it was like I had a purple football on my gut, you know? He's had them on too, you know? You ever been able to figure what the hell those things are for? Yeah. I mean, they twist around. It's sticking me in the bottom, you know, and I'm going around. And up there, Mickey Eisley and his 7 madmen of rhythm. You know, they had this big bass drum with a picture of Hawaii on it, you know. You can see the waterfall going and the lanterns are hanging. And now they begin to play, "Good night, sweethearts." Oh, it's over. Oh, thank God. But, Shepard, remember, you are going to remember this magical night all of your life. This is a magical night. And now we are out in the driveway, and it's raining. Boom! And my convertible's open. I turn to Pearl, and I say, "Pearl, I'll go get the car, see?" And I start to run through the rain. And I see my little maroon flower instantly starts to dribble down. My hair is hanging down, and I open the door to the Ford, and boom! It's raining, and it's up to its axles in mud. I get in the Ford, and I start it, and it goes click. The battery! I holler, "Schwartz, give me a push!" And Schwartz goes... I said, "Come on, Schwartz!" And Schwartz says, "Okay." And he puts his Chevy in gear and boom! Up goes the back of my car. "All right, Schwartz, I gotta go." I go over to the door and here's Pearl, her corsage. I didn't know that orchids were capable of having stomach trouble. It's pouring down all over her, see? And we get in the car and I said, "I'll put the top up." She says, "You better." And I get it halfway up, and it stops. And she's sitting there. The rain is coming down. Everybody has left the parking lot, except me and Pearl. Well, I better not tell you what I did. It was such a fiasco. I cut into the bushes, went around the back of Cherry Hills Country Club, and hitchhiked home, leaving Pearl there. And as far as I know, she's still there. Give her a hand. And as far as I know, she's still there. Give her a hand.
Mornings at 5:15 on WOR. It's Rambling with John Gamble. Stay tuned now for Barry Farber and his guests through the early morning hours.